Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the Court is now sitting. God save the United States and His Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-1573.
May it please the Court, I'm August Flengey with the Justice Department here on behalf of the Secretary of HHS. The language in the Medicare DSH provision is technical but straightforward in its purpose, to identify Medicaid-eligible individuals. This is apparent when we see that Congress used this exact same language in the DSH that is used in the DSH provision some 50 times in the U.S. Code, including repeatedly in the Medicaid statute, to refer to Medicaid eligibility. But the HCAP patients in this case are not eligible for Medicaid, as all parties agree. It is true that HCAP patients have low incomes, but the district court was simply wrong in reasoning that the Medicaid fraction of the DSH must necessarily count every low-income person a hospital serves. Instead, the DSH uses Medicaid eligibility as a proxy on the theory that by counting the proportion of Medicaid-eligible patients at a hospital, that figure will serve as a rough but reasonably accurate proxy for the total number of low-income patients at the hospital in comparison to other hospitals. This is because hospitals serving a high percent of Medicaid-eligible patients are likely also serving a large number of low-income patients overall.
Well, this brings me to a question then, Mr. Griffith. At 12 in your brief, you say, in the second new paragraph, instead, but forgetting the instead, the HCAP was submitted to the Secretary for purposes of setting the methodology by which Ohio will calculate the Medicaid DSH adjustment. Now, there's nothing cited there to document that, and I am at a loss to be certain how we can determine that. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I'm not sure there's anything in the record of this case that ties those together, but it is.
Is there a regulation requiring submission of this kind of a plan?
There's a regulation requiring that states establish a formula for calculating a Medicaid DSH, which is different from the Medicare DSH that's at issue here. And states have great flexibility in setting that formula. And the statute that authorizes it, which is 1396R-4, specifically says states may count people who are eligible for Medicaid or they may count other low-income people. So the Medicaid DSH uses the same language as the Medicare DSH in identifying Medicaid eligibility, but also allows the consideration of patients who are not eligible for Medicaid but have low incomes. And it is that authority under which the state submitted the HCAP.
Now, I think so other states would have submitted their own versions?
I believe every state must have a Medicaid DSH formula so that hospitals serving a disproportionately high share of low-income Medicaid patients get an upward adjustment in the rate they're paid for that Medicaid treatment.
Is there anything you can point to on the submission at 43 and following that the state sent for approval? Anything
the best I can do is point to two things. One, this submission does not comply with the requirements for a state plan, which are in 1396A. And two, this submission does square with the requirements for DSH in 1396R-4, which requires a, quote, plan amendment to define which hospitals will get a Medicaid DSH and how much that DSH will be. And this is part of the kind of definition of which hospitals will get the Medicaid DSH because at the very beginning on page 44, each hospital that receives payment under the provisions of 5112, and that's the Medicaid DSH payment and some other state payments that are unrelated to the Medicaid program, shall provide these medically necessary services to low-income population people. So the state says, in order to get this Medicaid dish adjustment, you've got to provide some uncompensated care to low-income people who are not eligible for Medicaid.
Well, this is on
I'm at 44 of the
form.
Appendix.
I'm sorry?
I'm at 44 of the appendix, quoting from the Ohio.
Right, and I'm at 43, looking at an OMB-approved form.
That's 44 and the subsequent pages are the attachments to that form.
Right, so what is there that you could tell us to, or show us, rather, to substantiate the rather simple point you just made, that this is the form used, not for the submission of a Medicaid plan for approval, but for the amendment of a of the methodology used for Medicare dish calculation?
The best evidence on this form, which I don't think is, I think the stronger evidence is the fact that this just doesn't square with the Medicaid state plan requirements. But on this form, if you look at towards the top, number 5, it says type of plan material, check 1. The new state plan is not checked. Instead, amendment is checked.
Which page are you on in the appendix?
This is page 43. And it's the top half of the form, and it had, but.
Well, that could, wouldn't, couldn't that apply to amendment of the, of either sort?
I agree. I don't think it's conclusive. I think the best, the stronger point is that the material here and this proposal just does not purport to or attempt to comply with any of the some 70 requirements for a state plan that are listed in 1396A.
But if it's
and it, I mean, the most obvious is it specifically covers people by definition who are not eligible for Medicaid, which would require it to be rejected as a Medicaid state plan on its face. There are others, there are many other differences. One, this provides only a limited types of services, inpatient and outpatient services, whereas Medicaid specifically provides for in 1396 DA 3 through 28 all kinds of other medical services that aren't inpatient or outpatient hospital services.
If age cap does not provide medical assistance as that term is defined in the Medicaid statute, could it still be part of the Ohio state plan?
It could, I mean, in some respects it is part of the state plan because it is the part that defines the Medicaid dish, and 1396A13 requires the states to submit a Medicaid dish calculation methodology. But that does not mean that the people counted in this Medicaid dish are themselves Medicaid eligible. That is because in 1396R-4, the dish provision of the Medicaid Act, it specifically says you can Medicaid dish can consider Medicaid eligible people, and it can consider other low-income people. And this plan on its face is not something that considers Medicaid eligible people because it specifically provides benefits to non-eligible people. So it must come under the authority under 1396R-4 for counting low-income
people. You just said I thought I heard you say that the something I thought was the Medicaid plan can cover Medicaid eligible or other.
No, not the Medicaid plan. The Medicaid dish adjustment can count.
Gotcha.
Both of those in determining how much to adjust the hospital's disproportionate share payment under the Medicaid Act. Now, I think if you compare
under Medicaid,
if you compare the Medicaid dish provision and the Medicare dish provision, the distinction becomes very evident because the Medicare dish provision just uses the language eligible under a state plan approved under Title 19. The Medicaid dish provision says you can count people who are eligible under a state plan approved under Title 19, and you can count other low-income people. So it specifically authorizes the counting of people who are not eligible for Medicaid, but that does not bootstrap them, those people who are counted as themselves being eligible for Medicaid, just like the Medicare dish, by counting Medicaid patients, doesn't make those Medicaid patients entitled or eligible for Medicare. They simply aren't entitled for Medicare. They're just counted in increasing the rate and giving more payments to these hospitals that serve a disproportionate share of low-income individuals.
I take it it's your, also your argument that, I'm rephrasing it a little bit, but that, that the word assistance is a term of art that always means financial assistance.
Medical assistance,
medical
I think,
assistance.
Is the term of art. That's,
okay, is the term of art, but it always means money.
I think it is, that's how it's defined. It's defined as the payment of certain services for certain eligible people in 1396D. And the hospitals,
which
I mean...
Which part of which scheme?
What?
Which scheme?
Medicaid.
In Medicaid.
Part of the Medicaid 1396D. Now, the term is not used, the term is used here in the Medicare Act, and the hospitals have argued, well, medical assistance means something completely different in the Medicare Act than in the Medicaid Act. I don't think that is a valid argument. I think there's a lot of statutory authority that we look at the whole act, which is the Social Security Act, and if the provisions are, you know, interrelated, it's likely Congress meant the same thing when using the terms in the in the two provisions. Here, the provisions are not only interrelated, it's a, the Medicare reference is a direct reference to the Medicaid provisions. This is not a situation where Congress is just using the phrase medical assistance in some other unrelated context, which it could do. Here it's directly referring to Medicaid, so the notion that we don't use the Medicaid definition, I don't think, carries the day. And it's important, the hospitals have conceded at page 53 of their brief that when this phrase, medical assistance under a state plan, is used in the Medicaid statute, it doesn't count HCAP. But they argue that the same phrase, eligible for medical assistance under a state plan, when used in the Medicare statute, means something different. We submit that that just makes no sense and is an unusual, highly unusual way to interpret a statute that is interrelated and is directly referring to the other provisions.
Is it your understanding that the phrase, it's medical assistance, right? That the phrase medical assistance is never used to refer to the provision of medical care in either statute?
I think we have a more nuanced position. That's probably true, but I haven't done a search for medical assistance. I'm speaking to the longer phrase, eligible for medical assistance under a state plan approved under Title 19. You have to read all of that together. And I think that all works together, and it all clearly is talking about Medicaid eligibility. State plan is careful, the requirements for a state plan are clearly set and carefully set forth in 1396A. Medical assistance provided under that state plan is defined in 1396D. 1396B provides for matching payments to cover a portion of the cost of that medical assistance. Well, there are no matching payments under that provision paid for these patients. So that's another part of the statute that just doesn't make sense if we treat these individuals as receiving the medical assistance under Medicaid. I talked about this earlier, but this document doesn't purport to be a state Medicaid plan. It doesn't comply with the requirements. It doesn't attempt to comply with the requirements. And it was not submitted or approved as a state Medicaid plan. It was submitted under the DSH provision. The costs of this care provided under this are not compensated by matching payments under 1396B. Instead, the hospitals received an increased payment for an increase in the rate of payment for the Medicaid services they provide. So the increase in payments is not for these patients. It's an increase for the Medicaid patients the hospital serve, just like the increase in rate under the Medicare DSH does not cover the treatment of the Medicaid patients that are counted in the DSH. It's an increase in the rate paid for the higher cost of covering the Medicare patients that are actually entitled to Medicare. The other side has argued that, well, the Secretary the Secretary and the courts have not used eligibility as the key factor. I think that's simply not true. In the cases dealing with whether the Cabell line of cases dealing with the payment for patient days for Medicaid patients, all those courts said the key concept was eligibility for Medicaid. And even if a particular treatment day was not paid for by the Medicaid program, because eligibility was the key, that patient would still be counted. Here, the patients are not eligible, so they fall outside that reasoning. And finally, the other side has argued that the demonstration project beneficiaries are not eligible for Medicaid, and that renders this interpretation inconsistent with the statute. I think there are two things wrong with that reasoning. First, Congress enacted the Deficit Reduction Act in 2005, expressly allowing the Secretary to include demonstration project beneficiaries. And even before then, the demonstration project beneficiaries presented a unique ambiguity, because they were there was language in that statute, section 1115, authorizing demonstration programs, that regarded them as receiving benefits under the state plan. So you had some statutory authority for considering them eligible for Medicaid. If there are no further questions, I'll save the remaining time for rebuttal. Thanks.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honors. Seven courts have reviewed the language, patients who for such days were eligible for medical assistance under a state plan approved under Title 19 in the Medicare statute, and determined that the language in the Medicare statute does not line up and does not reflect those same words in the Medicaid statute.
Assume you didn't have any prior interpretation by any other court. What would your argument be that this should not line up with the same language in a similar statute passed by the same Congress?
One of the first rules of statutory construction is to look at the plain language of the statute.
Yeah. And the second, same as the language used in another section.
Of a different statute.
Yeah, of a different related statute.
And
so why would not, what the first rule is we try to find out what Congress said.
Right.
You're right. But if it's saying the same words in two different places, does it mean two different things in those two different places?
Well, this, a second rule of construction would take us to, if it's not defined in the Medicare statute, you would then go to the dictionary to find the interpretation of the words in the statute, whereas in the Medicaid statute, because it is a defined term, you would not look anyplace else. If we were reversing, for example, if we were reversing this and trying to figure out what those words meant in the Medicaid statute by looking to the Medicare statute, you would never get there because it's a defined term. Right. That's not the case in the Medicare statute. It is not a defined term. So that's why in the absence of seven cases finding that the words do not mean the same. Under statutory construction, you never get to the Medicaid statute. You would go, is it defined in the Medicare statute? No, it's not. What do we do next? The cases hold. Go to the dictionary. The dictionary will help you out there.
I'm not sure why we would go to the dictionary before we would go to another congressional use.
That's what the courts hold. It's
I was asking you, though, what you would argue if you didn't have other cases on this.
No, well, these cases, I'm not talking now about the seven cases. I'm talking about the CBS case that's cited, the Chevron case. They all lead to here's the process that we go through. You would never get to the Medicaid statute under Chevron or the CBS case. You just don't get there.
I've been applying Chevron for 20 years. It's not immediately apparent to well over 20. Not immediately apparent to me why Chevron would dictate that order. Chevron dictates that you attempt to determine the plain meaning of the words. Whether you do that by dictionary or by comparison with other usage, I don't think Chevron would seem to me to be agnostic on that question.
Well, in the CBS case, it goes right to that. It says that if it's not defined in the statute, go to the dictionary. And if you're following that case, that's where it takes you. You know, if we're setting that case aside,
but I've probably taken you off the track you intended to follow.
No.
I'll let you get back to it now.
If we're setting that case aside, and the question is, what is the difference between the two statutes? Why would we go to the Medicaid statute? They serve two different purposes, and in the Medicare disproportionate share calculation, the importance of this language, it, as pointed out in the Portland of Venice case, and as pointed out by in the Adena case below, is to capture as many of the indigent population as possible in the Medicare disproportionate share calculation for purposes of accurately reflecting how deep the imposition of taking care of the poor is on that particular facility. The patients in the Portland of Venice case, they did not qualify for Medicaid under any set of circumstances. Those expansion populations are people who, but for the 1115 waiver, would not receive, would not be put into the Medicare disproportionate share calculation. So the when Portland of Venice was decided, the argument of the secretary at that point was, we pay for it, but it doesn't mean that the days get included. We acknowledge that we're paying for the 1115 waiver population, people who don't qualify for Medicaid. And the court ruled, well, you do pay for them, and therefore, since you pay for them, their days must be included in the Medicare disproportionate share calculation. On the other side, we do have seven cases, all of which reject the Medicaid statute's definition of not only eligibility, but they also reject the definition of medical assistance. In the Cabell case, the secretary specifically raised the argument that he's raising today, is that under the Medicaid statute, medical assistance means payment. And that case was decided in favor of the plaintiff hospitals, that those days get included. So you have seven cases out there agreeing that there's a difference in the two statutes, despite that the language is the same. In this case, we do not argue, by the way, that HCAP is a state plan. We've never argued that. We've argued that it's part of the state plan. Under the language of patients who are were eligible for medical assistance under a state plan approved pursuant to Title 19, you can look at the state plan and you can identify what individuals in the HCAP program are eligible to receive the benefits, and you can identify what the benefits are they will receive. So it meets the definition. In addition, contrary to what was stated earlier, if a hospital does not provide care to a person who's receiving HCAP benefits, they receive less Medicaid disproportionate payments. Their payments will increase if they're treating more HCAP patients, and it will decrease if they're treating less HCAP patients. So the notion that the care is not being paid for is not accurate. What is true is that the payment is made by Medicaid, and it is either made by way of an add-on, in this case, it's made by way of a lump sum payment at the beginning of the year. In other states, it's made by payments once a month. So these folks are eligible for medical assistance under the state plan. And if they don't receive that medical assistance, the hospital does not get reimbursed for the disproportionate share portion that relates to the HCAP program. Thank you, Your Honor.
Seeing no further questions, then thank you, Counselor. You have how much time left for about? Pardon?
4 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Counsel. Speak to the seven cases at some point during your rebuttal, please.
Sure. I can address those first. The leading case of those seven is the Fourth Circuit's Cabell case, which has the most extensive reasoning. And that case specifically said medical assistance, as it's used in the Medicare DSH, is defined in the Medicaid statute. It said if we cannot infer that Congress was superseding this definition and meaning something different. If we follow that reasoning, which the other side suggests we do, the other side must lose because they concede that HCAP is not medical assistance as it's defined in the Medicaid statute. So I think the strongest case in the government's favor is the Cabell case. So I think it's unusual that they're citing that case in their favor. On the dictionary definition, the other side argues that you have to go to the dictionary first. The Supreme Court in Stroop did not do that. Instead, it looked at interrelated provisions of the Social Security Act, in fact, to determine that the programs operate together, and after doing so concluded that the statute was clear and unambiguous in Chevron Step 1. So the Supreme Court did exactly what we're asking the court to do in the Stroop case with respect to the Social Security Act. And there are several other cases that do the same thing, including Helverine v. Stockholms and Atlantic Cleaners, where the court said, look, if these statutes are used in similar, if they are concerned with similar subject matter and they don't have the use of the phrase does not have dissimilar connections to each other, then it probably means the same thing. Here we have even stronger connection because the Congress is specifically referencing the Medicaid statute in the language it's using where it incorporates the Medicaid definition of medical assistance. Finally, the other side talks about expansion populations under a demonstration program, but there's an important distinction between this case and the expansion population. There you had a statute where Congress specifically told the Secretary to regard those expansion populations as eligible under the state plan, as being getting payments under the state plan. That regarding authority led the Ninth Circuit to hold that these were, the Congress treated them as Medicaid eligible. And they point out that the expansion populations, well, they had payments made under the Medicaid program. Well, they had matching payments under 1396B due to that regarding authority. The HCAP patients do not receive 1396B matching payments to cover their care. Instead, there's simply an adjustment in the rate of Medicaid paid that considers, that counts those patients to determine if a hospital treats a disproportionate share of low-income patients, just like the Medicare DSH counts Medicaid patients in increasing the payment. Under their reasoning, because a hospital providing Medicare treatment, it gets an increased payment based on the Medicaid patients counted in the DSH, those patients are now eligible for Medicare. That's simply not true, and it makes no sense in that context. It also makes no sense in this context. So I encourage the court to reverse the district court, and thank you.